Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is John here, and I'm with Dr. David Krause from HC3. And we're jumping in tonight because, as you've probably heard in the news, or you've seen in the news reported, there has been many cases, outbreaks of Legionnaire's disease, Legionella, that has been found in an assisted living facility in Albany, New York. And Dr. Krause is actually up there working on that case as we speak. And we wanted to jump on tonight to discuss not just what's happened in Albany, but what's happening throughout the board, because these cases, these outbreaks are happening regularly. And what can we do to potentially prevent this, especially in assisted living facilities? So that's what we're talking about. David, welcome. How are you doing?
Thank you, Jack. I'm doing well, doing well. It's been a long day. On a couple of days.
I understand that. It's been a very long day. I mean, since this, we've got, you know, we're not going to go too much into what you're doing up there, but obviously you're on site at the moment. You're involved in this outbreak that's happened in Albany. We've got 4 confirmed deaths that has occurred due to this outbreak. But what I wanted to do is, I mean, you can talk a little bit about that, but This seems to be a growing problem, David, especially in assisted living facilities. It seems to be that this is a particular concern that we should be very well aware of.
Yeah. Well, you know, assisted living facilities kind of fall into a gap between regulated facilities like long-term care nursing, a rehab facility or a hospital, and an apartment complex. So they fall into this nether region of facilities, but they do often have highly susceptible populations. And while they're not required under Centers for Medicaid Services CMS mandates to have water management program plans, we're seeing more and more outbreaks occur in these facilities. And we've got, you know, they're being lumped in with healthcare facilities now because of the susceptible populations. This one's kind of unique because of the high attack rate, the larger the number, normal percentage of individuals who contracted the disease. And then also just the rapidity, how rapid the outbreak appeared to happen, you know, in the press and what's out there in the media. Really shows this happened very, very quickly. And so there's something unusual about this. And I think with much more investigation, we'll hopefully figure out what's happened here, what makes this case unique. And we'll be able to share that with other public health officials, other health ALFs, assisted living facilities, and with the public to hopefully recognize some of the unique aspects and lessons learned here.
David, you mentioned obviously the people that are you know, targeted or not targeted, but people that are susceptible to it. There's a susceptibility to it, especially in these assisted living facilities. Let's talk a little bit, because we've discussed this a few times. We've had other discussions. You know, we've talked about Legionnaire's disease a number of times in HC3. But let's just remind people out there, because it might be, they need to be reminded how Legionnaires, especially maybe in building blocks, you know, in building apartments, in assisted living facilities and hospitals, how Legionnaire's disease can actually transfer, how it actually goes from the water supply and then is contracted by the individual, so that we can let people know out there what they're dealing with.
Yeah. So just real quickly, it's a waterborne pathogen. So it's a bacteria. It's an aerobic bacteria that is in the soil. It's naturally occurring at low levels. It makes it in through the municipal water system into the plumbing systems of buildings. Sometimes construction, water main breaks, disruption of water services can prompt or initiate an outbreak. And that outbreak happens when high levels of Legionella, or what we say growth. So the bacteria gets into the building water system where it can find a place to grow and amplify. And then once it gets sprayed out of a spray nozzle, a sink, a shower, gets put into a hot tub or something of that way where it's made into very tiny, small droplet aerosols, then we breathe it in. We can inhale it. And portion of people, and especially if you have your former smoker, certain susceptibilities, compromised immune system, they can lead to a very serious disease, pneumonia, which usually ends up in hospitalization. So most people who get this are, they end up in a hospital. And then a certain percentage in healthcare facilities is about 25% of those who contract the disease actually perish from it. What's aggravating right now are some new, not new, but the latest definitions for Legionnaire's disease, and confirmed and suspected and probable cases have been, it's been around since 2019. And so, it's a bit of a fluid situation of who gets lumped into a case as part of an outbreak. It's a bit of a wonky discussion, but it's always not clear as to whether somebody will or won't be. So I'd say with the latest case definitions that CSTE has put out, has been adopted by most of the states and the CDC, we're seeing case inflation. We see 2 to 3 times more people now included as an outbreak than would have been included in an outbreak years ago. So that's somewhat of a unique situation where, in 2018, you wouldn't have counted many of the people who are now being counted or considered to be part of the outbreak.
And obviously, David, that's given us more concern because now we're seeing these numbers are rising, and we're seeing a lot more of these outbreaks and those people that are actually contracting Legionella through, whether it be a water faucet or a shower head, these cases are becoming more frequent. And it seems to be that, it's rather more a reactive thing to deal with. It seems to be at the moment, it seems to be upside down. We're being reactive. An outbreak happens and, we'll kind of get into the proactivity at the moment. But something that you mentioned that I think is really important for people to understand as well is, you mentioned about how, and maybe in other cases, but the case that you're in, that you're involved with now that's in the public eye, that how rapidly it went through. And I think it's important to let people know that the path of transmission, it's not transmitted, is it, if I'm right? It's not transmitted person to person. But, let's talk a little bit about that so they don't think it's rapidly transmitting the way maybe something like COVID would.
Yeah. This is one disease where we really don't see this as being a contagious disease. That one person has it, they transmit it to the other people on the road. It is considered to be a building related illness that you contracted from the source of growth in the building. That's really important for people. Now, there's one paper where they claim one person got it at one time from another person. I don't even give that much credit because they really didn't do the investigation to rule out other possible pathways of exposure. So, but the thing we do have to remember is that Legionella is just one. Now, it has surpassed all other waterborne pathogens combined in drinking water as the cause of outbreaks in the United States. That's according to the recently released report from CDC and looking at data from 2015 to 2020. But the other big ones, it's just one of the big three, Pseudomonas and non-tuberculous mycobacteria or NTMs. They all travel in the same sources. They have very similar pathways. You find them in water systems. And those other diseases, other organisms, don't cause as many fatalities that we know of, but they cause more hospitalizations. They cause more hospital costs, healthcare costs, than Legionella.
Yeah.
So it is really a broader issue that we've got to start looking at in a proactive manner. But the economics of it, the knowledge, what you need to do, what can be done to fix it or prevent it, it's not settled science. It's far from it. And what people are being told is, and facility operators is, you know, have a plan, figure out something to do, but that you don't have to test. And I can tell you, you can't in any realistic fashion know that you have a problem or don't have a problem with Legionella unless you take samples to measure that. And there is such a, hesitancy to do that. And I understand why, because we can find Legionella in many facilities where there's nobody sick. And, you know, how do you interpret that? And what, you know, do you go off the deep end trying to fix it and prevent it? So I'd say we're still in a growth stage of understanding what can be done, what should be done. But until you at least know you have a problem or not, then these kind of situations come along and hit you blindly. They blindside people. Now, they do not know what's coming until it's a crisis.
Now, I guess, David, when you're talking about being proactive and sampling, you know, more people should be sampling. We should have a water management plan in assisted living facilities, or we should have a water management plan in residential building or in, you know, other leisure facilities, hotels, etc. And they don't do that. It can spread rapidly, but, you know, through the facility very quickly because it's in the air through the HVAC system, whichever way it is. But my question is, with the water manager and the sampling, what is really holding them back from doing this sampling? Because it seems to be that is a proactive measure that should be taken on board by every assisted living facility and healthcare facility now, to start sampling regularly, to be proactive so this doesn't happen and it doesn't become a reactive outbreak.
You know, it's not mandated. It's not required. Assisted living facilities and for years, even healthcare facilities and most buildings, it is not a requirement. And unless something is a code or a referenced standard that they have to comply with, if you take a sample, you better know what you're going to do with the results. And right now, I think there is a hesitancy or a lack of understanding of, what do I do if I take a water sample? How many water samples are needed? Is it one? Is it 10? Is it 100? Yeah. Is it 1,000? So that's not even settled even amongst the experts. How many samples does it take in order to fully assess a property? And these are not inexpensive samples. They're hundreds of dollars per sample. There are thousands of dollars for each assessment. How often do you need to do it? So there's an unsettled standard of care for what you should be doing.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing I think that inhibits people is, what do they do if they find it? If they find one bacteria, what do you do? Do you do anything? Do you worry about it? Do you not? If you find 10,000,
I guess this comes in, David, to the levels. I guess this comes into the levels, like what constitutes a dangerous level that they should know about? Because you mentioned before that, what do you do if you find it? They find it and it's not necessarily anybody's getting sick, but they find Legionella in the water system.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because there has to be some kind of understanding between the levels of detection.
Well, one of the biggest problems is that we don't have consistency among the laboratories. There's been efforts to do that through the elite certification process, but you send two different labs, two different samples, or the same sample, and they'll get slightly, sometimes hugely different results. So I don't get too wrapped around the axle about this precise number. And within the AIHA guidelines, the second edition, we have a very robust and very consistent with other interpretive criteria on what do these sample results mean. And it usually comes back to a category. So very low concentrations, one, less than 10 CFU, colony-forming units, per milliliter of water. That would be considered transient. Something not indicative of growth or amplification. Could be growing soon. You probably need to look at
That's
it.
That's what I was going to say, yeah.
And then once you get above that into the tens to hundreds of CFU per mil, All right, that's pretty. That means you don't have good control of the water. You're not keeping the pathogens low, and they're probably, if they're not at a risk right now of causing an outbreak or disease, that is increasing every day that you're doing this. And then finally, if you're in the hundreds to thousands, that means you don't have control, and there is a risk. It's not a guarantee. It's not a predictor. But there is a risk of people contracting the disease. It also depends on which species and serogroup. So Legionella we estimate 89 different species and serogroups. It's one species that causes the vast majority, 95% of all cases. One species, one serotype, LP1, Legionella anomalous serogroup 1, that causes over 90% of the actual cases and outbreaks. So that's the one. If you're going to pay attention to anything, you look at that one species, that one serogroup. But what do you do with that other information? You get LP6, you get Anisia or some fluorescent, something that may indicate a problem, but you don't know. I'd say that uncertainty of what do you do with the results? How do you interpret it? And how low do you need to go? And what do you need to do? There's a lack of qualified people out there and experienced and knowledgeable people.
Absolutely.
How to interpret those results. So if you're going to take a sample, you better know what you're going to do with the results.
How to take the sample.
How to take the sample is very important. Make sure you're sending it out. It's not rocket science, but there's many ways you can mess it up. So you want to have a competent person collecting that. And that's the other part of it. The consumer.
No, David,
they don't know who's competent. There's no certification out there that you can rely upon to say, okay, you know what you're talking about.
And obviously the certification is something that we're looking toward working, through HC3 and the collaborations that we have is something to do that. I want to kind of jump in because let's talk about for somebody out there who's maybe in a leadership role within an assisted living facility or any other facility that's potentially a threat. You mentioned, obviously, what do you do? What do you do if you get something? What do you, what do we do where these levels are? But maybe they need to understand, look, how fast can this colonize? The colonization, obviously, having the right recipe for disaster, how fast really can we think? If they've detected something, they ignore it, how fast are we looking for colonization when the environment is perfect?
That's a great question. That's a great question. For years, for decades, Legionella has been considered to be a slow-growing organism, a fastidious organism. It's kind of had just the right conditions to grow. I think we've certainly disproven that. This organism, once it establishes, can really amplify quickly, and that it's a bit more robust than people think it is. They used to only think it would be in cooling towers. They used to only think it would be in hot water systems. We find it in cold water systems. We find it in decorative water features and drinking fountains fairly regularly. They're not necessarily associating with disease all the time, but if it's there, then it can be growing other places. And looking at the exposure levels there, so it's not just the concentration, it's just not the presence, but what do you do in order to fix it? That's really where you need somebody who knows what they're doing, knows what they're talking about, because a lot of the times, consultants will offer recommendations that are entirely ineffective, such as just flush the water, just run more water through it. If the water you're running through it also has Legionella and it doesn't have any disinfectant in it, then what do you think is going to happen? You're just dumping more bacteria into your pipes and feeding the biofilm. We got to kind of think of it as a pesticide, as a pest. As a microbe that has started growing where it shouldn't be growing.
I love that analogy. Yeah.
And so monitoring it as a pest, kind of in the integrated pest management model where you monitor, you look for, you have surveillance for it. If you see indications that it's establishing or coming in, then you take actions. You use, different control measures like heat. That doesn't work so well. Supplemental disinfection, chlorine, monochloramine, identifying different ways to disinfect. But we're kind of stuck. We don't have a whole lot of tools to remediate. you know, there's copper silver ionization. There's some people have used hydrogen peroxide. But one of the things we have to be concerned with, just like using an insecticide to kill roaches or ants, when you use chlorine or any of these disinfectants, they are toxin. There are toxic substances that we try to put in at just the right amount that will kill the bug or inhibit the bug without hurting the people, without hurting the equipment. And so it's not taken lightly. So I think that's another big reason that facility operators, you know, the cost of doing this, the risk they perceive as causing this, you know, if we uncover a problem that, you know, isn't really a problem, or we uncover a problem and, you know, somebody then sues us and we didn't do the right thing, or we didn't do the things fast enough, all this uncertainty about it. So I think that's one of the biggest barriers to people taking proactive measures. But that's human nature, and we've been dealing with barriers to proactive public health and individual health for years. You know, all of us should be eating our vegetables and exercising every day, right? But once you have a heart attack, the treatment for the heart attack is not eating vegetables and exercising. Okay, you got to back up.
No.
And do what you need to do in order to save life. And that's kind of what we're dealing with Legionella and outbreaks. Sorry, I've been talking all day.
You know, I love the way you bring a pest control analogy in, because obviously in the pet, if you've got an invasive species, you have to control it. And very often you have to look at it as an investment, because for instance, termite control. You're in a place where termites can damage your house and eat your house and everything else. It is now, I mean, legally, you have a home. You can't sell a home. You have to have a termite bond. You have to have these things to show that you're controlling that species that potentially damage it. So maybe health facilities, because let's face it, health facilities, they're making an inordinate amount of profit out there. Now, I'm not going to jump into the whole political argument about profit and God knows what else in the healthcare industry, but we're not stupid. We know that they are. This seems to me to be an easy decision for a proactive campaign in a facility to have a water management plan, because it's just like termites. Maybe we need to get to that level where we have to have some kind of certification bond where they have to have it, because as you say, David, we're not also dealing with Legionella, we're dealing with Pseudomonas, NTMs, everything else that's involved with it.
Yeah.
So it really is an investment for these facilities to move forward with this, rather than, because they don't want ants coming in the place and they don't want termites eating up their home.
Yeah,
so
yeah. But the
I
other
think
part
it's a
of it
analogy.
Is, if you're in Nome, Alaska, you're not worried about termites. Okay, it's just too darn cold, and you're also not worried about Legionella. It's a very, you know, it's almost unheard of in those harsher northern climates. So really, having a model that allows you to truly assess your risk, to accurately and reliably assess your risk, your facility's risk, so that, okay, you're not spending money for something you don't need when you're in Nome, Alaska, or you're in, you know, the Antarctic. That's not your problem. You have other problems, but, you know, Legionella and termites are not your problem.
Grizzlies.
So I think as professionals in this field, we really need to start speaking that language of how do we come up with a model that allows facilities and encourages them and benefits them.
Yes.
To understand their risk, to evaluate that risk, and then to take the steps necessary to protect public health. I think it's still not settled, and we owe it to both our profession to increase our knowledge and understanding of Legionella and outbreaks and how they happen, what preventive measures work and which ones don't. And, you know, in many ways, I feel that the ASHRAE methodology, which is based on hazard analysis and critical control point systems, or HACCP, may not have been the best model to use. maybe integrated pest management may have been the most appropriate method, you know, to look at is as an invading pest that is treated and when you need to treat, that is monitored when you are in between periods of infestation. And how do you apply those pesticides, those disinfectants in a way that don't harm the people, but actually, you know, effectively treat the building? I mean, you know, we go to great measures to tent a house when it's been invaded with termites. That is not a safe place for a person to be in while that process is happening. We have to, you know, to look at Legionella and other waterborne pathogens, not as everybody has to do the same thing everywhere you are, but at least to have a process by which you can evaluate this, make conscious decisions that are both protective of the people and the facility, and of course, you know, the owners of that facility. So, you know, we've got a lot to learn, lot to unpack.
There's a lot to be done.
Absolutely.
I want to, before we finish off, David, as well, because we've covered, you know, about the public health and the facilities and things, but let's talk about in our field in environmental health and industrial hygiene. There's a lot of work to be done there as well. Wouldn't you agree with education and also certification? Because not all companies or not all environmental health are ready for this. And a lot of them don't know how to react, how to actually operate within the remit of when there's an outbreak. I mean, it's something we discussed in one of the discussions that we had with Ryan when you guys came back from your conference. And that's something else that if anybody should go and have a listen, it was a fascinating conversation. But I think that's important to understand as well, is that even in, you know, in health scenarios and industrial hygiene and occupational health, they're not ready either, because there's lack of education.
There's a lack of education, there's a lack of tools, there's a lack of resources to be able to, to educate people and prepare them for this. We are working with the American Industrial Hygiene Association, develop a much more robust online certificate type program to do this a little bit down the road, but developing those education modules, some core competencies so that, you know, everybody's at least working from us the same skeletal level of understanding, interpretive criteria, and risk management. You know, how do we manage this risk without overreacting, without underreacting? But we need to do that across disciplines, not just industrial hygiene. Industrial hygienists are well positioned in order to understand the complexities, the science, the exposure risk factors that are dealing with this. But environmental health professionals at the county and the state health departments, they absolutely need more resources, training, education, and experience in doing this. Beyond that, you know, infection control professionals and healthcare facilities also, well building and leads building certificates, certifications, those people who operate those buildings, they need more education and training. We need a bigger workforce. We need more people out there who are able to respond to outbreaks and to take effective, proactive measures to prevent things. And we are trying to pull that together and identify, the training and the modules and information people need to have, and then to have some level of certification for the consumer. So that the end consumer knows, okay, so if this person, this company, they have this certificate or certification or credential, that they at least have some clue as to what needs to be done, and they are not figuring out things on your dime. So that is something we're certainly working with. We have a small group within the Indoor Environmental Quality Committee for AIHA of 11 people. And when one of our early meetings, we were just introducing everyone and we were listening to the experience. And of those 11 people, we had 315 years of professional aggregate experience dealing with water.
That's a lot of experience in the field.
That's a lot of experience. So
I think we're David, I want to thank you, obviously, for I want to thank you, obviously, for being on. I want to thank you for coming because this is important. You're right in the middle of this case that's in the national media. We don't want to see people, you know, we don't want to get reported on people dying in these facilities and this actually happening. So what would you urge? Let's leave your kind of last thought. What would you urge to assisted living facilities, in particular in the high-risk cases or even in apartment complexes? What are you going to urge them to do now, moving on?
Well, you know, this would apply, and believe me, this does not apply directly to the case at hand, but in general, don't stick your head in the sand like an ostrich. If you're hearing about outbreaks in your city, Brilliant. In your neighborhood, around your part of the country, reach out to your colleagues who have similar operations. Reach out to your neighbors. Find out what's going on. This is something that can affect entire neighborhoods, entire cities. You know, look at Flint, Michigan. Look at Washington, D.C. Look at Baltimore. These are community problems. We never want to, you know, wish well on our neighbor, you know, or ill on our neighbors and say, well, I'm glad it's them and not me. Next time it may be you.
Yeah.
So, you know, take the initiative to learn about this, educate yourself, educate your staff, and maybe take that initial step to see what can I do to protect ourselves from this, this type of catastrophe, for sure.
Excellent, David. Thank you. Thank you for joining me. I wanted to really jump into this because this is really a hard hitting subject that's in the news at the moment. And obviously we want to educate people out there. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. If you have any particular concerns or you need a risk analysis done or you need to get your place tested, then please reach out to Dr. Krause and the team at HC3. It's hc3fl.com. One of our experts will connect with you, will help you, will guide you in what you need to do. Again, exactly as Dr. Krause said, don't stick your head in the sand, because Legionella is not just here in the States. It's everywhere. It's the potential is there, obviously, with the right environment, the right conditions, there is a potential. And you never know. It could be your place next. So be more proactive than reactive. David, thank you for joining me this evening.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And everybody be safe.